This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 1st of September, 1962. The title of this lecture is The Point Where the PC Begins to Get Clear. This lecture is 62 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
Right now, I would like to give you a bit of a lecture on the subject of clearing, its history, the history of clearing. You think this is something new, clearing something brand new? Nobody's ever had anything to do with clearing before. But in actual fact, 2,500 years ago on this planet, Gautama Siddhartha Buddha envisioned the idea of clearing. He's called Buddha because he sat under a Bodhi tree and went clear just like that. Well, actually, a Scientologist today would call this an exteriorization. But here was the idea of clearing on this planet. And this fellow, he said, well, I'm just a man and so forth. He tried to show other people how to do this about 500 and something B.C. And sure enough, some people popped out of their heads. Now, a Scientologist today could take the bulk of the people who were around him, if he knew exteriorization, and bang them out of their heads. How long they'd stay out of their heads and what would happen to them because of this is not any part of the story. But it is true that the bulk of the people that you have anything to do with can be given a subjective reality on the subject of the fact that they are themselves, they are not a body, and so on, as easily as that. You say, well, try not to be 3 feet back ahead. Those are the magic words. Somebody, I don't know, I think it was somebody who was here right now, I think, he wrote a skit one time by which somebody got access to the nationwide microphones in BBC or NBC or something of the sort. And at the crucial moment, told the whole world, try not to be 3 feet back of your head. Of course, the whole world went out, spang! I thought it was an awfully amusing story. If you ever get access to a microphone like that, anyway, Buddha recognized the beingness of man, independent of a body, and then people came along and muddied up the water, said you must never be cause. That was enough to keep everybody in their heads. And apparently from that time on, everybody worked very hard to keep everybody in their heads and keep them believing they were a body, and on forward. But this single effort, which was a rather interestingly simple effort, it does not necessarily, you know, give us a religious background, but it's a fact that it emerged in the field of religion. And this single effort brought about the civilization and the change of life of three-quarters of Asia. Enormous population areas. There were areas which had been rough and cruel and mean. And just this single realization is the only thing the Buddhists had to sell in those days. Just that one thing. Ever since that time, we've heard of the mysteries of the East. They all spring from that single action. The fellow sat down under a Bodhi tree and said, I think I'll be out of me head. And he were. And he says, "What you know? I ain't no bleeding body. I'm a Thetan. This is me, and that's it." Now, that's not much of a realization to civilize 3/4 of Asia with, but it's just exactly what happened. The Pali canons and that sort of thing give us a lot of data and a lot of methodology and a lot of this and a lot of that, and if you follow a lot of this and a lot of that, you will never be clear. Said you must make no conception between separateness and togetherness or something, and you mustn't ever be cause, and never cause anything, and don't step on bugs, lay off the fifth dynamic, and don't ever drink milk with your left hand, and walk 3 times around fire hydrants before sitting on them, and a lot of other impertinent information. And of course, this impertinent information all added up to no accomplishment. So frankly, it has just been a memory. A memory 2,500 years long. Interesting that a memory like that would persist, isn't it? The mysteries of the East, the mumbo-jumbo, the hocus-pocus, go back to that as a subjective reality. But isn't it interesting that they give us another action? About 10,000 years ago, a legendary monk by the name of Dharma, whose name survived as part of the materials of Buddhism. Dharma. You'll hear all sorts of definitions of this word Dharma. I wouldn't even bother to give you 6 or 8. It's all... Dharma is a thing. So is kismet, you know. So is fate. So is karma. See, all of these things go back. But in actual fact, it was a monk by the name of Dharma. And his contribution is not part of recorded history. I remember it fairly well, however. And he said, "I wonder if people could be 3 feet back of their heads." See, he said, "I wonder if they could be." Went down the track a long ways. 2,500 years ago, Buddha, studying Dharma, sat down under a Bodhi tree and said, "I wonder what it feels like to be 3 feet back of your head." And there he was, you see. Now, it's quite interesting, very, very fascinating what happens to an individual in those few moments. It's completely fantastic. Unless, of course, he walks out with an astral body, which we call an item, or an entity, or a valence, or a circuit. They're all the same thing. He walks out in lump form, you know. He walks up. "I'm a Thetan, you know." Modern spiritualism can exteriorize items. They don't bother to exteriorize things, and they say, "I'm over there." You can always tell one of these guys, you know. He says, "I'm over there." Fascinating, you know. Well, think it over for a moment. How can the fellow say, "I am over there"? I am now looking at me. I don't see nothing over there. But I know I'm over there because something is speaking over there. Must be me. Because there isn't anybody else over there, if there is anything over there. Well, that's not what we're talking about, that branch. You might say that stub line on a broken up railroad, see? We're not talking about that one. Nevertheless, this also served one way or another to keep the memory of this thing alive. But what happens to an individual when he simply exteriorized, pang, is quite incredible. And sometimes the individual never finds out about it. Doesn't remember having done it. During an operation, somebody says, "Oh, to hell with it," you know, to be grammatical. Even you ladies would probably say this, you know. Surgeons in there sweating, you know, and the blood's flying in all directions. And supposed to be under anesthetic, you know. You can see the TV presentation going. They don't operate anymore, you know. They give them TV presentations. So it's all by courtesy of BBC. And they can hear the... scalpel, razor blade, barbed wire. My God, where's my spectacles? You know? And the patient says, "Oh, to hell with this, you know? I was never cut out to be a TV star or a steak." And he backs off. He leaves. He says, "Skip it." You know, he gets back here, "Skip it." Well, poor old body. It was a good body. We had a lot of fun. Hey, it's coming too. They even got his spectacles out. I guess I'll pick it up again. Hello, folks. Well, I'm coming out of it now, you know. And afterwards, the patient says to the nurse, "You know, something very strange happened to me during that operation. You know, I felt detached from it all. And I have a distinct recollection. In fact, there's a picture here. I have a distinct recollection of being out of my body at the time of the operation." The nurse says, "Oh." "It's this new drug. Gives people illusions. Gives them illusions. They think of things. They deluce. You ought to go to a psychiatrist and get deloused. You're off the beam, see? You're riding in on the wrong skidway." The person says, "You know, I must be going nuts. I had to think right away." Doctor comes around and they diffidently say, "You know, doctor, I have this picture of the operation. It's right here now, and I can see the operation. As a matter of fact, I have the operation. And I had the distinct feeling that I was... And the doctor says, "Oh, this is very serious. You need some B1, nerves." "It's all right, don't worry about it anymore. We'll cure you even of living." The person goes away and they feel a little bit unhappy about it. One of them says eventually in an actual recorded report on this sort of thing, I know it isn't true, and I know it was a delusion, but it was so real." You see, you could overwhelm somebody's reality. So this actually happens, not just there, but other places. Somebody's reclining in a deck chair, and the ship is going up and down, you know, and up and down, and up and down. And they stand in there watching their body go up and down, go up and down. I say, "I don't belong out here." Snap! Then they don't think anything more about it. They don't even remember it. Some people, you're processing them, they say, well, you know, I exteriorized some years ago, and I never thought anything about it until this minute. That's very peculiar. I've been out in me head. In fact, you ought to ask yourself, why exists this colloquialism, being out of one's head? He's out of his head, you know. It's even stuck in the persiflage of the language. I've had some very interesting experiences. I discovered these things quite some time ago. But I had some very interesting experiences back in 1952. We did a lot of this in 1952. We fooled around with it and did a lot of things. A lot of auditors attributed odds and ends of this and that to it. And we had a lot of excitement. There was a lot of excitement going on in 1952-53 on the subject of exteriorization. Because we had some of the magic words, you see, and we could exteriorize somebody. The point was, how do you exteriorize them for any length of time? Of course, all of this comes after the fact of Dianetics and engrams and whole track and all the rest of that. We knew all that. But how do you get the individual out of his bank? How do you just say, well, step out of your bank and fly right, you know? It was such a short action. Very short, very, very positive. We had the magic words in several capacities that you could coax somebody. As a matter of fact, I could run all of you here on locate three spots in the room, locate three spots in the body, locate three spots in the room, locate three spots in the body, and about 50% of you, we ran this for 15, 20 minutes, would start drifting back of your bodies. And those of you who could still see as thetans and didn't need thetan spectacles, see, you'd say, hey, what do you know? I'm not a body. I'm me. In other words, those old technologies still exist. They're quite interesting. They're fascinating. The briefer one, you look at somebody fixedly. You don't have to put them under drugs or shots or spinning discs or anything of the sort. You say, try not to be 3 feet back of your head. And the guy goes, pong! He can't help it because these reverse flows of staying in a body are so stuck that the second you put your finger on them, they act like coil springs. This also has liabilities. Mind you, all this technology I'm talking to you about is old. It's been laid on the shelf. We know it. We can do it. And we don't do it. The reason we don't do it is quite obvious. It's because the stabilization of that state, when achieved without that gradient, I'll take up in a moment. But it's not even that it's dangerous particularly. But you say to this individual, try not to be 3 feet back of your head. And he goes, spung, and he says, now's my chance. And the body goes, and the auditor says, hey. Hey. Hey, wake up. The Thetan's now passing Arcturus, you see. And the body is... Man, if you ever saw a limp body, that's when that happens. They call that doing a bunk. Gone. One auditor sitting in front of somebody who was doing this, he said, please come back. Please, please, please come back. Think of your wife. Think of your poor children. Think of your job. Think of your boss. The auditor completely ran out, and he says, "Think of your poor auditor." And the guy went, "Gee, I sure went a long way." I've been called at 2 o'clock in the morning, frantically, by a group of auditors who presumably, each one in turn, had been called by the original auditor, this PC. They calls the next auditor. Finally, they all give up and they phone me, you see. And they say, "Ron." I always know that any use of my name, particularly like that, is going to be followed with some interesting information. "Ron, we've got this girl here, and we exteriorized her, and she's stuck on the ceiling." "And she can't get off the ceiling, and we can't get her back into her body." Well, I said, "All right, put the pre-clear on the phone." So they did, and I think I ran a technique of some sort, like try not to be in your head, or try to be in your head, or something of the sort, or try not to be 3 feet back of the ceiling. And she got back into her body, and everybody breathed a sigh of relief. Because, frankly, police forces, mayors, mores, all seem to object to littering up the countryside and the apartment houses and the streets with thetanless bodies. They have some objection to this. In fact, everybody in the society objects except the morticians. And you find you have only one friend left, the local mortician, you see. So anyway, that was a period which had many interesting, simple experiences connected with it. There were some things which might even have been classified as adventures. Now, one fine day, I was up in Camden. We had an office in Camden. And one fine day, a girl sailed in there. Wow, you know, she's just all motion and blah, 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 and she couldn't talk and so forth. And she was about to be divorced day after tomorrow, and they were looking for her, and maybe they were going to throw her in the spin bin, and she didn't know. And you've got to do something for me. You've got to help me. And one by one, you see, people got driven in by this, you know. And she finally got back up, and she got cleared up to me, see. You know, not the receptionist. "Got to do something for me. It's absolutely terrible." She couldn't even articulate really what her problems were. So I sat her down at the table, and she was going on at this mile a minute, frantic, dispersed, inarticulate state. And I said to her, "Sit over on the back of that chair over there." So she did. And suddenly calmed down. She said, "Well, I'm having a bit of trouble with my husband. He's going to divorce me, and they want to put me back in the institution, you see. And I think probably I could figure my way out of this all right. I think the best thing for me to do is to go see my sister." "Yes, that's what I'll do. I'll go up to my sister's, and we'll straighten it up from there." Calm. Everything's fine. Handle anything. And I said, "Well," I said, "that's the interview. That's it. I'm glad I've handled your problem." And she went splang back into her head. And she says, "I don't know what I'm going to do. My husband's divorcing me tomorrow, and I don't know where I'm going, and they're going to put me back in the institution." And so forth. She walked out. She was still going this way. What a fantastic observation. During those few minutes when she'd been bunged out of her head, totally sane, cool, calm, collected, charming personality, whole body, face, lineaments changed. She looked young. She looked pretty. Back in her head again, ugly, upset, gone to pieces, crow's feet. You see, the whole works. Well, what do you know? Oh, we've seen lots of weird, wonderful observations of this particular character. There's auditors sitting right here right now who have done these things. Marvelous. So anyway, clearing. Well, now that's exteriorization, and there's a form of clearing. But why did we stop it? Well, because it wasn't stable. No matter how hard you worked on it, the individual's driving his car, he's going to work some morning, and thetans are very curious. He drives his car, and he drives up to the traffic stop, and he puts on the brakes, you see. He's way out of back out of his head driving the car from some vast distance, you see. He gets very curious about the cupola in a nearby building. Well, he goes over and he takes a look at it, you see, as a thetan, you know, and examines it. He wonders what all that commotion is down in the streets, you know. And he suddenly realizes, my God, I've left my body sitting in my car down in the street, parked at a go sign. He gets down there. The cops are harassing him. Everything is harassing him, and everything is going to hell. So he says, well, I'm not going to do this again. I'm liable to lose this body if I keep on doing this. So I'd better stop it. And they ceased to experience, just like that. You understand? Oh, but why can't this state be made stable? Interesting problem. Yes, you can rather exteriorize somebody out of his bank, but why can't that state be made stable? Why won't it stay stable? Ah, the secret. The secret is that the bank is not in the body. He takes it with him when he goes. There he goes. Grips all packed. Old second-hand rusty chains, you know, coiled around each foot. Nice pair of handcuffs. Some old tin cans stuck in his pockets, you know. And a great big GPM towed on behind for ballast. So the next series of discoveries was that the individual was what was aberrated, not the body aberrated the thetan, you see. Do you see that? The individual, it was the guy himself. It was he or she himself personally, by his or her own courtesy and slight oversight, that was causing all this havoc and commotion. And you could sometimes exteriorize the individual out of his bank. And of course, he couldn't stay out of his bank very long because his bank was packed in both pockets, breast pockets, hip pockets. He just had bank to spare. One amusing incident of doing this, at a PC Scientologist who was always coughing. No matter how quiet things were, you could always hear, well, I might as well use his name, old Burke Belknap, cough. See? You'd say, Burke, and he would say, yeah. You know, you get tired of being coughing your face. So one night, I had him out at the house down in Phoenix, Arizona, quiet desert night, you know, and there was nothing to disturb anybody at all. So I said, now, Burke, be 3 feet back of your head. He says, and he was. Body's still coughing, you know. Well, it's the old gag of taking over the automaticity. The Thetan takes over the action he is doing. You see, he takes over control of what he is doing. Instead of letting it happen to him, he makes it happen to it, don't you see? So I said, now, Burke, I said, start coughing back there 3 feet back of your head. Well, he almost blew the body up, you know. All of a sudden, the body stopped coughing. And I said, well, how are you doing? And he said, without the body convulsing. He was coughing 3 feet back of his head. He said, I'm the one that's coughing. The body isn't coughing. I am. A big cognition. A coughing Thetan. It changed his cough. Indeed, I don't think he coughs anymore. But that gives you an idea of the randomity you run into. Exteriorization. Exteriorization is merely something that can be done, something that can be used as a proof, something that can be used in research, something which is technically feasible, is frankly of no value. Beyond those points I've just mentioned. It has no great value because it isn't stable. The individual's out there and he knows about it, so what? He's twice as unhappy when he comes back into his body and finds he's having a difficult time getting in and out of it, don't you see? Now, what you've got to do is handle the individual. And that individual happens to be you. And you don't have to exteriorize the individual to have him find out what he is. I will give you the example right now. I've given this to other congresses. This is an old one. All right. I want you to do this. I want you to do this. All right. Now, look at the room around you. Look at the room around you. All right. See the room? All right. That's the physical universe, right? That's physical universe, okay? All right. Now, just feel your body a little bit in here. You got a body there? All right, that's a body. That's fine. All right. Now, although some of you can't mock up, I don't want to give you the lose, but... get the idea of or mock up a picture of a cat. Do that. All right. Now, who looked at the physical universe? Who did that? All right, that's fine. And who felt your body? That's good. Now, let's take this picture of the cat. Now, who's looking at the cat? Do you understand something from that? Who's looking at the cat? Now, psychology, that's all. Thank you. Now, psychology has figured it out that a picture of a cat looks at a picture of a cat looks at a picture of a cat, don't you see? And you have images which look at images, and that's how you explain perception. But you have a physical universe around you, and that's quite real, isn't it? Well, who considers it real? And you have a body. Well, who considers that real? You have a picture of a cat. Who's looking at that? Well, who's doing these observations? It isn't done by a series of mirrors. The physical universe isn't looking at the physical universe, is it? And the body really isn't looking at the body, and certainly the body isn't going to look at your picture of a cat. I'm sure it would not be interested. Now, there's a rather shortened rendition a little series of tests that you can do with somebody. It's been done better before. But, in other words, you perceive and you experience. Well, what's this you? What's this you that does this? You say, I don't feel well. Well, it's a fantastic step forward for the individual to realize that it isn't his body that is feeling bad, he is. See, it's like old Burke coughing. Body isn't coughing, he is. That's a fabulous step forward, but it rather hangs one with too much sudden cause. And someone on the order of saying, all right, well, look around the room. Who built this stuff? Well, you did, that's who. I think that's no gradient. I don't think that that approach would meet with much approval. I think you're liable to get an argument on that. You have to approach it by a gradient. Now, as long as the Thetan recognizes his own beingness, he is, of course, susceptible to recognizing, of course, his own aberrations and what his beingness is. Most people go through life not only not recognizing their aberrations or their beingness, but thinking that everything they do is right and everything everybody else does is completely wrong. Now, the one peculiar thing which distinguishes a Scientologist from people, the one little thing that distinguishes it is, frankly, after somebody has studied Scientology, had some processing and so forth, no matter how mad he gets, no matter how upset he gets, no matter how sick he gets, he never quite loses this little tiny bit realization that he's doing something peculiar and something a bit aberrated, and that something is happening here that he has something to do with. You got it? He just never quite loses that point of cause. People say, well, I got mad, and I am furious, and I am sick, and that sort of thing, and they never realize that they themselves have this, they never have this little viewpoint. You know, they're fighting with a wife. It doesn't mean that Scientologists don't fight with a wife, you understand? They do every once in a while. Co-audit team, you get some of the most remarkable ARC breaks. Talk to each other for days. But the point is, and then eventually why you process it out, you know. But you get this, no matter how mad you are. What was the idea wrecking my car? The idea running my car over the cliff. You did it. Why didn't you realize that the brake pedal was right in the middle of the thing? All you had to do was step on the brake pedal, so forth. My God, how can you be this callous? You're terrible, you know. Well, dear, it's your fault, actually. Why didn't you have the brakes fixed? You know, here we're off to the races. And during this whole quarrel, however, the Scientologist never quite loses the viewpoint, you know, I must have overts on her, you see, or I wouldn't be getting this mad at her. He never quite loses that point. It might get awfully dim. But he really just never quite loses it. All right. That is a point of cause, a point of causation. I have something to do with the universe. I have something to do with me. I have something to do with the body. It's just that little difference. And that, frankly, is not any fantastic difference, but you would be incredulous at how that difference is missing out amongst the highways and byways. The fellow who is mad at his wife is totally justified for being mad at his wife, and he never did anything at all to get his wife mad at him. Fud. Fact accompli. There it is. That is truth. He all of a sudden finds himself with an empty bank account and everything but an empty head, you see. And he says, look at what they've all done to me. Look at what they've all done to me. Look how cruel life has been to me. And you know, there's something remarkable about it all, because I myself have never done anything at all to accomplish my own demise. The world is full of guilty people. The prisons are jammed with them. They're tried every day in court. And it makes me this lonely island of total innocence. That person has the misfortune of never having found out that he himself, to any degree, had any causation over his own existence. That's his bad luck. It's like you get some student, bright-eyed, comes over to St. Hill. Boy, can I audit you? And all, they get down there and they get the E-meter and they stick it all up, you know, and fix it all up and they start their model session. If you told me any half-truths in yesterday's session, that's equivocal, that isn't a read. I don't know. How do you set this? How do you turn it on? Well, I sure can audit, though. That's the one thing I know how to do. All right. Be 3 feet back of your theta. Thank you very much, you see. Well, that's a pretty lousy piece. He ARC breaks all the time. Nothing really wrong with my auditing. My auditing, perfect. As a matter of fact, I've asked a couple of the instructors this evening to come over to the apartment so I can give them a few tips. You know, the guy can go on along this line for quite some little while. And one day, something like falling over the threshold of a treasure trove, he discovers a very interesting thing. He has found out a brand new discovery. He's found out that he didn't know. And at that point, he starts learning. You take some poor sod, some psychologist, you see, and he's pretended to know, 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 till he himself believes it. And you start trying to train him. And when you start trying to train him, you can't teach him anything because he already knows. Of course, that his case gets worse and that he gets worse. And that everything else is going to pieces in his vicinity has nothing to do with his own fate. See, that is all extraneous. That's being done to him, don't you see? The reason he can't learn anything of what you're teaching him is because you are very stupid in trying to teach it to him. Now, if you just taught it to him in some other way, he undoubtedly could learn it if it were worth learning, you see? He's a learning victim. Well, that's very interesting. As a matter of fact, it's so pertinent that St. Hill instructors sit around on some student waiting for him to find out that there aren't ARC breaky PCs and good PCs and difficult PCs and fine PCs and different kinds of PCs. They just sit around waiting for him to find this out. And one day somewhere up along the line, he's passed the May 3rd, 1962 bulletin in theory. He's passed it in practical. He's had it checked out in auditing. He knows it. He can quote it. He can do everything with it. But he's done that maybe two or three times. And one day, sitting in session in the PC, who is one of these types of PCs, a very ARC breaky, mean, nasty, vicious PC, you see? And this PC is saying, scream, 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 scream. It all seems quite logical to this fellow. Yes, he dropped the E-meter. That he admits to that. Yes, he was auditing him without having turned the E-meter on. Yes, he admits to that. He was a half an hour late for the auditing appointment. Yes, that's perfectly true, and all this is reasonable. So naturally, the PC is ARC breaking. So he sits there, and the sweat is running off of the PC's brow. And then suddenly, he's haunted by the idea that the last couple of times this happened, somebody was very cross with him. And, of course, this was unreasonable of them, too. Because he, naturally, knows PCs are different. You know, they're ARC breaking. The PCs are very easy to audit. They're the apathetic type. And then there's PCs that are very difficult to audit, and they're the 1-5 type, you see. P species are different types. They fit on the tone scale in different ways. And suddenly, back someplace, comes this little idea. Maybe this guy's got a missed whiffle, that May 3rd bulletin, that keeps saying it, and then they keep making me pass it. And although there's no reason for them to keep on making me pass this bulletin, I'll just show them for once and for all that they're dead wrong. See, so I'll just throw it in here. All right. In this session, have I missed a withhold on you? Oh, well. Yes, as a matter of fact, I stole your lunch. All right, I'll check it on the meter. Have I missed a withhold? That's clean. How are you doing now? Oh, I'm doing fine. Where's the ARC break? You're not mad? Something has happened here I don't understand. This PC is not being an ARC breaky PC. Oh, well, maybe I've made an improvement in his case. He walks around thinking about this for some time. And he moves in that period and on that gradient. So the next day, the PC says, yow, 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 and you're ugly. And by golly, if I get audited by you just one more time, I'm going to blow. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to blow. I'm going to blow. So there. And he says, in this session, have I missed a withhold on you? Oh, well, it comes to that, yes. Yes, matter of fact, I was downstairs telling the instructors they ought to put you down in class a couple of days ago. And the ARC break line. Now, all of a sudden he says, you know, there's something I could learn about auditing. And he starts in and goes off at a high climb. After that, we know he'll make it. You understand? I'm not talking about training. I just try to give you this other little thing. There is this thing in life. There's this thing in life. The individual goes along realizing that it is all done to him. That is truth. He's got it in for himself. His mother always told him he was his own worst enemy. He keeps getting gypped on the second dynamic. His family always hated him. Every group he's ever belonged to threw him out. Mankind is busily rejecting him. Dogs growl at him. Things are always being dropped on him, and all he has to do is try to plug in a lamp, and he gets a... At night, he hears voices which are directed critically at him. And God has had it in for him for a very long time. This he knows, that is truth. That is truth. And in living this, as he moves along, nothing improves. The more it's done to him, why, the worse he feels. But one day, he says, do you suppose that I have anything to do with this? You suppose it's because I make my wife wear woolies? Do you suppose there's this dim little dawning of a responsibility for his own existence. That's where clearing starts. That's where clearing starts. You'll never come along and take the magic syringe, hike up the fellow's sleeve, and go, psst, and have a clear. You can't say to the individual, be 3 feet back of your ruddy head, and have a clear. Because a clear is not a condition of being out of your head or in your head, or in this universe or out of it. It's not a condition of location. It is a condition of responsibility. And it's a condition of ability. That's what it's a condition of. Now, fortunately, these days, we don't have to say to the individual, well, we'll clear you as soon as you've taken full responsibility for everything that's going wrong in the whole universe. As soon as you've done that, we'll clear you. The guy plows in at a steep power dive. No, you don't do it that way either. Actually, you don't ask anybody to take very much responsibility at all. But the earliest stages of processing are simply devoted to letting it be found out that he has had something to do with his life. And when he is able to recognize that he's had a lot to do with his life, he is then able to move up to a point where he can have some responsibility for his life. And at that time, he starts to drop pieces of the GPM. He starts to drop this, that. Things start to key out. He does a little bit better. He does a little bit better. He begins to handle his associates and so forth. Things still go wrong. These dogs, they still keep barking at him, you know. It worries him, too, because he's wondered what he is doing to dogs. And he knows he never does anything to dogs. He doesn't let them come up and get their teeth messed up on him. He always kicks them first. Well, he seems to be able to get a lot straightened out in his life, all except this dog thing. That kind of still worries him. And one day, while he enters into actual on-the-road clearing straight up the line, and he finds out his dynamic is domestic animals. Imagine his embarrassment, you see. And he's on the road. That resolves that. Actually, the individual isn't really asked to take any responsibility. By modern processing, he simply does. But by taking responsibility up along the lines, he, of course, is capable of handling himself in his body and in this universe. But what about this bank? Once upon a time, we thought you had to erase the whole last 200 trillion years. I'll go into this further, but it's very good news. You don't erase it these days. It disappears. It doesn't go back on the track. It doesn't go back into yesterday. It doesn't go into tomorrow. It doesn't get parked on cloud nine. It evaporates without fumes or residue. Which is quite important because storage space, being the price it is, actually, that is what happens. All of these horrible black masses that give you your ulcers, they simply evaporate. They're put there by alter-isness of the basic purpose of the individual. And the more he doesn't do what he thinks he should do, the more black mass he adds to bother him. He punishes himself for it. We'll go into that later, too, later in the Congress. But where an individual is taking off from scratch, he's taking off against an imperfect background. Clearing hasn't been on this track, the track we're on. We've been going down this track for 200 trillion years. There's been exteriorization. There's been moments of uplift. There's been an abandonment of it all, an abandonment of that type of life, and the setting of a new basic purpose. There's been all of these various things. There have been ways and means by which one steps sideways from the liabilities of his accumulated acts and past, his collisions with existence. But frankly, so far as I know, until this moment, there has not been a smooth, workable, relatively swift process that extends down into the depths of the beingness and creates a stability. We have had clears before in Scientology. We've cleared people by the process of theta clearing. Yes, they were clear. They might have been clear for a day, a week, a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, just by exteriorizing them. See? Bang. And then next thing you know, bang, they're down again. Early people were simply cleared in this lifetime so they could front the bank of this lifetime. Clearing by book one was not as extensive. We're actually doing something which is completely extended beyond book one, far more thorough. All we trying to do in book one is give the guy back his pictures. Well, that was reasonable enough, and we called it clearing. All right, but we're way out beyond that now. In the last year or so, we've been making routine three clears. And a routine three clear, well, we made them 21st ACC, and some of those people were quite stable for quite a while, and they all have felt better since. Routine three during the 1961, so forth, we made clears. They were more stable. They were better. They went further, and so forth. But those chap two had a tendency to fall in every now and then. So the hunt has been for a stable gain, not achievement of the state, but a stabilizing of the state. So the guy wasn't worrying about it, and he wasn't going around being careful of being clear. He was just himself, you see. And that's what's been achieved here. Because in actual fact, the bank evaporates. There it goes. The fellow feels better and better and better. The level of process which exists today as comparison to yesterday's requires, unfortunately, for the higher levels of clearing, more skill than yesterday's process, because you were playing with the dynamite of the whole reactive bank. You've got to do it accurately, you've got to do it well, you can't do it slipshod, and so on. The goal has to be the goal. There's no doubt about that. You can't have messed with that. You start listing a wrong goal, and you will soon have quite a mess on your hands because you're adding to the bank every item you put on a list. See? The right goal, everything goes right. And the wrong goal, it all goes wrong. But there are gradients of processing below that and of preparation up to a state where a goal can be found, which are, of course, very valid and very valuable, and suddenly became far more valuable than they have been for a very long time, which I'll also tell you about in this Congress. We've got some other things solved quite accidentally and incidentally on the road to clear. But the history of clearing, as you look back up the track, has existed in various forms, states, and ideas amongst man, and earlier than man, for a very long time, and has never been an attainable, accomplishable, easily reached fact for the vast majority of the people, has carried with it tremendous stipulations as to how you must sit and meditate, and for 15 or 20 years, how you hold the ibis position. They had various things that didn't have too much to do with it. Now, what we're taking up is the stabilization of the individual as himself, better than himself, better than he has been as himself, able to operate, able to be well, able to continue forward. All of these other states are attained in the process of doing that if you did it all the way. But frankly, today, a first goal clear is superior to any clear we've ever made in the past because his stability is fantastic. Of course, some people come within 5 feet of it, you see, and then they decide that they don't need that extra few hours of processing, and they never get stabilized in the state. Well, it only takes those few hours of processing to push them over into that state. We're in control of this situation now. Just like the Scientologist differs by realizing that he himself has something to do with what is going on, and that he has had something to do with the bad luck he has had in life, just as he differs there, so we have come to realize in technology that the stabilization of a case depends upon improving not the visible, momentary condition of the thing, but improving his ability to confront and cope with existence. And as that rises, of course, his aberration decreases. We are on our way to making a brand new race. This is not an overstatement. It is the most fantastic understatement of all time. I want you to know that. I'm not overselling it to you. I don't have to. Amongst you around here, there are two or three or four who are either clear or just about clear. And somebody points to himself and says, no, that's right. But pretty soon, yes, this state is desirable, this state is attainable. The actions required to go through to this and so forth are successful. It's a fantastic announcement. If you hadn't come here today, I would have been very disappointed. It's like opening the door of a treasure trove and saying, it would be like, and look at all this gold and jewels, you know, and turning around and there's nobody there to look in. Well, the door is open and it's all yours, and I'm glad you're here, and I'll spend the rest of this Congress telling you about that and about other things. Thank you.